Cinnabuds receives support from Associated Bank.
Cinnabuds, Cinnabuds, two buddies talking about cinema.
I'm Dory Zori from Radio Milwaukee.
I'm Christopher Pollard from Milwaukee Film.
And we have a very special guest today.
Yeah, Mr. Marty Kazabowski.
Hello, friends of the cinema and the greater Milwaukee area.
that's perfect. Marty is a writer and director. He's a filmmaker that we're going to talk to about his film and about the whole journey of making a film from a Wisconsin filmmaker's point of view.
I cannot wait to hear the good, the bad, and everything in between. I've got to think that there's some people, Marty, that listen to this podcast that are also interested in being behind the camera or creating a film in some way. So your expertise, I think, is going to be helpful. I guess we're going to talk about a lot of it in the regular podcast, but this all kind of came about, Christopher, because Marty's got a film coming out soon.
I feel like I never even owned a theater, you know? Yeah, I handled the business side of things, but...
It wasn't what you thought it would be?
Hey, Jerry's here.
There's no easy way to bring this up. I gotta raise the rent. If you can't make the raise, you're out.
Just sucks.
Does this mean we're closing?
You could just book more interesting work.
Whenever I book more interesting work, no one is coming. Nobody comes to the theater if they haven't heard of what's being performed.
Yeah, so Early Bird is the film.
Yes.
And then it's going to be streaming soon.
So it's either streaming soon or it's already streaming.
Depending on when you're listening.
Yes, that's right. Comes out on March 26th. It'll be available on Amazon Prime and iTunes, I believe, for sure. And there might be a few other things, but I can't confirm nor deny what other platforms it'll be on.
Sounds perfect.
Those start.
Well, we've got a lot to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
You go ahead.
Before we get into the professional part, Marty, give us a little tease. Like, when were you like that little kid making films and making your parents watch stuff when you were little?
Yeah. I'll tell an anecdote that my mom loves to tell, which is she can remember when I was like 5 years old, I would wander around this grocery store telling everyone else in the store, all the employees and anybody my mom knew from town. I grew up in a very small town in Wisconsin. And I would tell all of them that I was getting the Brave Little Toaster for Christmas or for my birthday, one of the two things. And I was telling everybody about this because I've just always loved movies. I've always been obsessed with movies. And yeah, and when I was younger, I actually wanted to be an actor more, but grew into wanting to make the things rather than being in front of the camera.
So Brave Little Toaster was your entree into film.
I mean, probably like other stuff. But yes, for some reason, I just was really obsessed with that movie when I was like 5 years old. So...
Well, I think we're going to talk mostly about The Brave Little Toaster rest of the
now
podcast.
We are, yeah.
I haven't seen it in 30 years, so let's
We're going to watch it live on the podcast. So stick around. We'll be right back. Hey, Wisconsin foodies. This is Tariq Moody of Radio Milwaukee. Join Milwaukee Magazine's food writer Ann Christensen and myself every Friday morning at 8 a.m. for This Bites, Milwaukee's longest-running culinary podcast. We talk about everything from new restaurants, pop-ups, cookbooks, events, and even an occasional interview with a local chef. Head over to radiomilwaukee.org/thisbites or listen anywhere you get your podcasts. All right, we're back talking to Marty Kazabowski about his new film, Early Bird. Or new-ish, right? I mean, it's new, but it's new to streaming soon.
Yes. So the movie came out at film festivals last year. It actually premiered at Milwaukee Film Festival right here in Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Yeah.
As well as IFF Boston. We kind of had like a weekend like double premiere thing going on. And so we did festivals for the last year and individual screenings and stuff theatrically. And then, 26th, there'll be... The first time it'll be available for the wider public.
Oh, that's great.
I know you don't do this for the awards, but did it pick up a couple awards at the different film festivals?
Yeah, we won two awards, one for acting and one for writing at two different festivals.
Well, how does that feel to get recognized for your work in other cities besides your hometown? Does that actually give you a leg up, or does like being able to put that on your resume though has got to help somehow, right?
I feel like I'm going to get too real. I feel like I don't want to say what I want to say.
Go for it.
It really depends. It obviously depends on if you win an award at like a major festival, that makes a big difference.
Right.
Or if you win like audience awards, that I think tends to matter more. Jury awards are great to receive, and it's like a great honor from any film festival, but it doesn't necessarily seem to break through because it's like anything with filmmaking or any like industry standard thing. People want recognizability with the things. So if you win an award, say at like a South by Southwest or a Sundance, that carries a lot of weight for people to check out your movie and stuff like that. And that's, again, not to say anything bad about the smaller festivals giving awards and stuff. That's still like a great thing to receive, but it doesn't necessarily change things for a smaller film like ours.
But I get what you're saying. Like there's a certain level where somebody wants to be able to say, oh, you have laurels from A, B, or C.
Correct.
But then there's a level where it's like, oh, they've won an award. It'd be great to include them in ours as well. Like there's.
Yes.
Yeah. And a lot of it's based on 100%. Money and recognizability.
100%. Yeah.
Talk a little bit about the story of Early Bird.
Yes.
And the writing process when you first had the idea and then how challenging is it to get it all out?
So Early Bird is a film about a small theater owner who discovers that he's being priced out of the theater that he rents. He decides to kind of, as a last-ditch effort, to like fulfill himself artistically, to kind of like put on these kind of passion project plays. And his theater that's been like very understaffed because they're so unsuccessful for years suddenly has a massive crowd appeal and gets overwhelmed with the pressures of that success. That's what the movie is in a nutshell. I made a feature film back in 2014 that, and then tried really hard for like 5 years or so to make my second feature and could not get it off the ground. And during that time, I spent all my time working as a, you know, I'm a working class filmmaker. I have like a basically a 9-to-5 job. And all my free time was spent with, you know, making like short films and music videos and stuff. But I spent a lot of time producing other people's work. And I was just getting really burnt out by the process of helping my friends make their like big projects and not being able to see my own larger projects get off the ground. And so I just had like a lot of frustration. And especially actually at the time, I would really struggle as a writer to like come up with any ideas that I liked enough to actually pursue.
Yeah.
And yeah, I just kind of like was getting really bitter about my place as a filmmaker and as an artist, and trying to like reclaim that led to me making Early Bird and making a movie that kind of like dealt with a lot of those feelings and things like that, as well as trying to challenge myself to try different things in the form of writing it, as well as, yeah, just like pursuing all these like thematic elements and trying to write a movie that would feel more authentic to what I wanted to make as an artist. Because I think I was also trying at that time to write things that people would like rather than just like make the thing I want to make. Or trying to seem like I was more artistic than I was, maybe, or something in some how whatever that even means. That's so pretentious to say. But
as a writer, Marty, do you think it's important to have somebody to bounce ideas off of, writing partners or someone that can help distill everything that you're doing? And if so, do you have somebody like that in your life?
Yeah, so Early Bird was actually the first script I ever wrote by myself. I typically do work with other people to either co-write something, or at the very least, my wife, KP Kajabowski, is also a filmmaker, and she will help me a lot in terms of writing. And a few other friends that I have that I trust their opinion on. Either like they will help me like with structure notes, or they'll help me with like joke notes. That's like a big thing too, is I always need friends who can help me tell me if something's not funny. That's really hard to hear usually.
Because you fancy yourself a funny guy. I mean, don't we all?
That's more the thing, that's, I think, is that, yeah. I think everybody thinks they're particularly funny, but yes.
That is a smart move because of that, it is always good to bounce it off people. Because
yes.
They're not all gold.
And I am a volume person, especially with humor. I'm a big, like, drive a joke into the ground person. So I do need people to be like, this is killing me reading this. Yes.
Well, there's the plays in the film, the plays they put on are, I feel like, the core of some of the comedy.
Yes.
Like there's the plays themselves, I feel like, could be turned into a lot of short films.
So what I'll say is, a lot of them were ideas I had, bad ideas I had, like embracing badness ideas I had. A friend of mine who gave me notes on Early Bird, his note, Scott Carey, he's the composer of Early Bird, actually. His big note was funny plays, serious drama outside of it. So the basis was always make the plays as goofy and big as possible and then let the character drama be more dramatic outside of it. And yeah, the plays were like, the big play in the movie is a play called Cat War. Cat War is a like bad idea I've had for a while to do like a Watership Down type live action cat war, like 10 cats murdering each other kind of thing. And I always wanted to do the big play in the movie to be like as dumb as possible and also be like a reference to other theater. At the time, Cats was coming out. When I was writing this movie, Cats was coming out, so it felt like a right thing to do. Like, okay, I'll do the Cat War thing because it referenced Cats. And then, yeah, like a couple of the other plays are based on like ideas I've had for like kind of dumb big budget ideas I've had that I thought would be funny as like really low budget indie plays.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Going back to the first film that you made, you made a reference that, or it seems like maybe it was a little bit easier to get that first one made. What were the steps or processes you had to go through? Is it pretty official? Was it all done here in Wisconsin?
Yes. Early Bird was also made in Wisconsin. My first film, Christopher Darling, that I co-directed was made here in Wisconsin. I will say the reason I was able to make Christopher Darling is because no one was getting paid on the movie. It was like it was very much a like all of my friends doing me a massive solid, and us being able to make that movie was like a great blessing, and I'm like very grateful to everybody who put all the time in on that. And then the next times I've tried to take them a little more seriously, and the movie that I spent like years trying to make was like it just required a much larger budget than anything I had done before, and I think I wasn't ready for that is why it also wasn't happening. But yeah, Christopher Darling was like very much a like bootstraps, use whatever resources we have to make this movie. That was like also like a road trip movie where we just shot it all in Milwaukee and like pretended it was in different cities and stuff. It was, yeah.
So I don't want to skip over too much, but
yes,
when you start writing, mm-hmm. then you have to start making the movie. You have to do fundraising.
Yeah.
And then you get all your equipment, you get all your actors involved. Is that like the lineup? You write it, fundraise, cast.
So it's, there's like, I'm going to get this wrong, and more legitimate people who are listening to this maybe will think this is bad.
I'm sure everyone does it a bit different when it's
yeah,
not,
that's
when
true.
You don't have.
Yeah. But there's like five, you know, arcs to making a movie. There's development, there's pre-production, production, post-production, distribution. So development is generally screenwriting, or it's like, you know, on the studio level, it's like putting together a team, getting a director.
Yeah.
For me, it's because I'm generally screenwriter, director, lead producer, and editor. I'm kind of doing all of them at once.
Right.
It's like the answer. Like I'm kind of like writing, and I try not to write like this, but it's hard not to. I do tend to write with producing in mind. Like what resources do I have? What do I know I can accomplish?
Right.
With the resources I have available to me, or with connections I have available to me, or oh, this location that I would love to shoot in that I know could let me shoot there. That kind of thing.
Yeah.
So Early Bird, part of the thing was that I had, you know, I was obviously thinking about all these things, but part of it was that I wanted to do something set in the theater, because that gives you a lot of this is getting so like in the weeds on like a producing level. I wanted to have something that would give the movie automatic production value. My first film, we, you know, did what we could with that. But I honestly felt like the thing that was lacking was not necessarily from like a design level, but just like it was missing, like it didn't feel like a big enough thing, or it didn't feel like it had the production value of like a larger indie movie or something like that. But this way, by doing it in these theaters that I knew we could get access to and would let us film there, I'll shout them out. 6th Street Theater in Racine, Wisconsin, Skylight Theater and Next Act Theater in Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Great.
We're all our theaters.
Yay.
But that added like immediate production value. You have a lighting grid, you have a big screen, you have a good stage, you have seats. It just immediately like makes the movie feel like a real thing, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know.
No, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So you, going back a little bit before you started making films, there was probably schooling involved.
Yes.
Was there anything before we get to like your college schooling or post-high school, were there any high school classes or rec classes that you were able to take as a younger person living in a small town in Wisconsin? No resources at all.
No, I hadn't even touched a camera until my first year at UW. I was a graduate of University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee's Peck School of the Arts. I hadn't touched a camera until then. I hadn't touched film editing software until I did my first year of school in a different college, but I touched like Final Cut Pro for the first time when I was like 18.
Mm-hmm.
Growing up, I just like didn't have, it was a bit of I didn't have the resources. B, I just like didn't have the time, and C, it just was like, I wasn't taking it seriously enough is the true answer, or like pursuing it enough when I should have been. Because I feel like a lot of people who are of my age, they all did stuff when they were like teenagers and stuff. They had their little camera. They like shot their fun things with their friends and stuff. And I just never did that. And I don't. And looking back, it is a regret of mine. Like I wish I had like taken that time to test some things out and try things and stuff. But I don't know. Yeah.
Going back to your time at Peck School of the Arts, is there a first class that you remember being in where you just thought like a big shift from thinking you were going to be acting to making movies, where if something just really clicked for you and you got really excited? Now you have access to all of these resources and equipment.
I gave up on the acting thing way earlier. Like, I'll say that way earlier. Actually, like doing like forensics and stage performances in high school, that was where it was like, probably not for me. Like,
too terrifying.
I can do a couple lines. I'm in early bird as an actor. I can do a couple lines. I cannot like act. I cannot get an audience to empathize with me how an actor does. Yeah, early classes. I mean, like, that film department is great. It really does push you to want something. You have to like, you get what you give in that department. I would say I'll shout out DocuWM is great. It's a great learning curve for young filmmakers to learn real life experience stuff, because you get to shoot like documentary projects and stuff with that in that class, and you do every aspect of filmmaking in that class. And then I'll also say Zen and the Art of Filmmaking is the other, like, that's a essential class to developing your creative language when you're a young filmmaker in that college, I would say.
Why is it essential, in your opinion, to have to do every aspect of filmmaking to start out with?
It depends on what you want to do. If you want to go for, if you want to be like a specialized person in the film industry, if you want to be like a grip or a gaffer, you don't necessarily need to go to film school for that. If you want to be a writer, a director, I do think it helps to know. Writer, maybe not as much. Director, it definitely helps to know the other departments. It helps to know as much about the language with those other departments as you can, so you can communicate clearly to your team what you want, what problems they might be going into. It's really about empathy is such an important thing as a director. Like, it's really important to be able to understand what everyone else is going through and how you can make their life easier so they can make your life easier and make the project better. So yeah, like learning all of those different tools, like, just adds to your toolbox. Why? And I always kind of think it's like, why wouldn't you want to learn all of those tools? It can only help you to be a better director.
That makes sense. When you're so when we go back to the casting of it and the actual production of the film, what are like the, when you're looking for casting, there's probably a big leap from your first film where you're, I'm just guessing,
and you can call in your friends.
Yeah, you're calling your friends to a point at which where you can actually hire people,
sure,
look for people and get them in.
There's still a lot of the asking friends for help, sure, kind of thing. That doesn't really go away. You know, at some point in like 20 years when I'm, you know.
But you also have worked with a lot of these people before, so you know what they can do.
That is part of it. Is like, it's more like I've worked with a lot of people that I still work with are people I've worked with for 10 years at this point. The director of photography, Spencer Ortega, for Early Bird is somebody I've worked with. He's literally been involved with every single thing I've ever made in the city in different aspects, because he works on a lot of things. But also, yeah, we've just always had a good relationship, working relationship. And yeah, like, that develops over time. You meet new people, you try new things, you develop a team that you like. Yeah, I don't know if I have a better answer than that for it.
That's a good answer.
Yeah. No, I love that. Mm-hmm. So what was the best piece of advice you got when you first started school in film? And then what is something now, looking back on the last 10 years, that you would tell yourself when you were first starting out that no one told you?
I thought you were going to say, what's the worst piece of advice you got? Feel free to answer that as well.
That's a separate podcast that could last probably 3 hours
long. I almost want to answer what's the worst piece of advice, because that's such a, God, that's so important though, to know what's bad advice too.
Wait, did it that actually? All right, if something comes to mind.
No, I don't. I'm telling you now, it's not going to happen, I don't think. Or nor do I maybe want to put that out publicly. Yeah. Is the issue.
That's smart.
Best piece of advice. I can't think of anything off the top of my head. The first thing that came to mind was something I got from a producing class I took in UWM, which is that, like, and I don't remember like the exact adage this was going for, but it was something to the effect of like, you can make a flip book if you want to fulfill yourself artistically. You have to think about your audience more, I guess, or like be mindful of what you're getting into with filmmaking. I think that's the thing. And I would say, like, that kind of goes along with a similar thing I would wish I had better knowledge of, or I'd given myself better advice, which is, like, be better at budgeting and just, like, understand the economics as much as possible. It is important. And, yeah, like, filmmaking is an expensive art form. It's, like, the only art form where it's you really can't do it yourself too much. You do need people for it, and that does, yeah.
Are you involved at all in trying to get more arts funding filtered to Wisconsin? Or I know that there's film incentives that we once had that maybe have gone away. Do you get involved in any of that, trying to make things better for the future of filmmaking
in Wisconsin? I haven't been personally, partially because I, like, have been away in and out of the state so much in the last couple of years. I didn't live here for 2 years. Actually, while I was making Early Bird, I didn't live here. But yeah, no, unfortunately, no. But I know Action Wisconsin is, like, obviously, like, deep into getting film and tax incentives back to the state, which has, like, been a ongoing thing that many people have attempted to do, and hopefully this is the time it'll take.
But. Yeah, it seems like we just saw something come out where Mark Ruffalo threw his voice into the ring, and it seems like we may have a we have some leadership in the government who might finally be open to that again, which is exciting for everybody, the whole industry, I'm sure.
I would imagine working at Milwaukee Film, these are the kind of topics that you hear a lot from filmmakers.
Yeah, and for a while it was just sort of like on the back burner because there was no one in our government who was going to back it. It was like a lost cause until there were some shifts. So there seems to be some enough shifts now that people are finally waking up to the fact that it will make the state money. And so hopefully it seems like a better time for it.
Going back to the very beginning in that first movie you were talking about that you're influenced by that you haven't seen for 30 years.
Oh, yeah.
Brave Little Toaster.
Brave Little Toaster. Besides Brave Little Toaster, what other kinds of movies have influenced you in your professional life?
Yes. I'm going to go on record and say Brave Little Toaster has not influenced me.
It's too late. It's on record.
Here's what I'll say.
That's going to be the hot sound bite, too.
I'll give it to you. I love the Brave Little Toaster. I haven't seen that movie. What if I watch that movie and there's some, like, horrible stuff that hasn't aged well? I'm
like
going to be
John
on
Hughes
record.
Kind of stuff?
You know, his movies mostly hold up, but yes.
Mostly.
I'll be specific toward Early Bird. When I wrote this, it was 2019. Two movies were really inspirational for Early Bird. One was Sorry to Bother You.
That's great.
Mm-hmm. Which is probably my favorite movie of the last, like, 5 years or so. A great dark comedy, for lack of a better genre description. I hate saying surreal because I think that word gets used too much for different movies, but that movie obviously plays with...
Yeah.
It's reality exists... The movie's reality exists sideways to our reality, is what I would say.
Yeah, a little magical element. But when you say that, everyone thinks of Harry Potter. But this is not that. Boots Riley.
Evil magical.
Yeah. Boots.
Yes. Yeah. And then the other one would be Madeline, which is a great movie that actually played at Milwaukee Film Festival in 2018, about an experimental theater. And it's about, like, the muse in art, kind of. It's about a young woman, like, starts attending this, like, experimental theater classes, and she kind of becomes the muse of her teacher. That's by Josephine Decker, I believe.
Those
two movies were, like, really inspirational for tonally what I was going for with Early Bird, as well as visually a lot of things I was, like, inspired by those two movies specifically. Those would be, like, the two biggest things that influenced that movie. And as far as, like, what influences me personally, that's such a huge question.
Right.
I don't know what to answer for that.
We'll have more specific questions on
sure,
that.
Sure. Yeah, that'll give you a better idea.
So to get towards the end of the journey, you have the film out, you sent it to festivals, it's been doing its festival run, and now it's ready to go into the streaming world.
Yeah.
How does that work, and what does that mean for the film afterwards?
Yeah.
What do you actually have to do? It's not like it automatically just starts streaming somewhere, right?
No, so that's through our distributor. So the movie got picked up for distribution by Good Deed Entertainment, who is a distribution company. They most famously distributed the animated Van Gogh movie called Loving Vincent. That was like their big launch movie. Yeah. But they've been distributing movies for like 10 years now or so. So they obviously take the movie from, or bought the movie from us for purposes of getting it online. From there, yeah, we'll be available for rent to start with, and then eventually on like a ton of different streaming platforms for free streaming. But I'm going to stop clapping because I accidentally keep clapping, which will be annoying to the future editor of this. Yeah. And then from there, it's just a matter of like, yeah, I don't really know where from there. Just telling people to check out the movie, trying to gather promo or distributor promoting the film, that kind of stuff generally.
Is there an anxiousness that comes that's like separate when you start streaming a movie compared to when they start showing at festivals? Does it feel different? Does it feel like this thing you created is out in the world? Like, are you more protective of it? Is it at this point you're like, just go and do what you can?
More
little
that.
Birdie be free.
Yes, more that. Mostly because, I mean, partially it's because every movie is like a 4 to 5 year process in terms of from beginning to end. That's how long it takes to get stuff done. And yeah, partially it's me emotionally being like just wanting to be away from it at this point. Not because I don't like the movie or anything like that. It's just like I have seen the movie a lot of times. And at a certain point, yeah, it's like I want to be removed from it because it's, yeah, it's like I have to. When you do the festival stuff, it's, I'm so much more anxious, especially because you're in front of a crowd and you want people to laugh and you want people to enjoy it. And then once it's on streaming, I can't control any of that anymore. It's literally just out to the masses and hope that people find it and hope that people, as well as like try to help people find it and then hope they like it. That's the thing you can't control. I can do as much as I can to get people to see it, whether they're going to like it or not. That's part of why like I do want to get to that point and just be like done with the film, quote unquote, because it is like the weight off my shoulders is like I can't do anything else. Like the movie's out there and it is no longer up to me whether it's whatever, you know.
The good news is with AI in the future, we can force people to like things. I think that's the next step is you'll just
God,
be made
I would
to like
love
it.
That. Oh, my God. Just ChatGPT. You are a film watcher. You love my movie. Right. Tell me how much you love it.
Yeah, we're on our way there.
Yeah.
Well, I think we're going to move into our get to know you questions.
Yeah, I would love that.
So we're going to ask you 3 questions to get to know your movie loves.
Do I get to pass the bridge? If I answer correctly.
Yes.
Okay.
There's a...
You'll be invited back on the podcast.
Okay,
in a
great.
Future.
Oh, great.
There's a troll
great.
And a magic wizard.
You get a key and a locket.
And so I'll go first because since you have made a comedy and you like comedies, and I know this is going to be a difficult question for you. What is the movie that made you laugh the hardest? Now, I understand that might be difficult, but you can name a movie that's made you laugh very hard if it's too much.
Wow. I'm sophisticated, so I kind of laugh at like the high brother. No, I'm kidding.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Speaking of movies that maybe don't age super well, the movie Walk Hard, the Dewey Cox story is so funny. And the first like 5 minutes of that movie, I think, are the hardest I laugh at anything in the world. All of the stuff with his younger brother. And spoiler alert, him chopping his brother in half. Let's have a machete fight. His dad saying the wrong kid died. There's a lot in that movie that's like so dark and so mean. But that movie is so, it's a good parody. But I think that movie does what I think a good spoof movie does and what a good comedy movie does. It also still makes you care about the characters. You need to have a balance of like caring just enough about the characters so that you find the jokes funnier when something happens to them that's funny. You have to care a little bit. If you don't care at all, it's just a mess, I think, tonally usually. And it's weird that that matters so much in like a spoof movie, but I think all the best spoof movies have that consistently across the board. So yeah, Walk Hard comes to mind.
And then on the opposite tip, we like to know what movies make you feel the most. Maybe that's like a crying moment or a movie that you turn to when you just need to feel like good. But like it could be sad as well.
I'm trying to think if there's something that moves me that I go back to at all. There's nothing that comes to mind. The one thing that comes to mind is recently, and I'm going to preface this by saying I tend to get really I had to travel a lot in the last year by plane. And if I watch movies on planes, that like helps me calm down. But usually I have like intense motion sickness usually. And so I tend to get really emotional on planes. And so
I have heard this from people recently.
Yes.
And I didn't know it was a thing.
Yeah.
But some people say on planes they get more emotional than they do if they watch it.
I will literally cry from the smallest thing on a plane.
So interesting.
So I was watching Erin Brockovich for the first time on a plane. And that movie is not like particularly sad, but it has emotional moments. You know, you want to see her like accomplish something. You want to see her take care of her kids and stuff. But I was like getting so teary-eyed watching Erin Brockovich on a plane. And I was like, I just want to see her raise her kids. You don't understand, Erin Eckhart. So that recently, as far as something that recently made me teary-eyed, was Erin Brockovich, which
that's
is
really
such
funny.
A great movie. Mm-hmm.
And then there's so many good ones to ask.
Dude, lay it on me.
What is a film
the movie theater? A movie theater question?
Well, I was going to do, what's a film that, I feel like there's a lot of these, that generally is not thought of as a great movie?
Mm.
Now, I'm not talking guilty pleasures because no one should feel guilty about enjoying anything. But what is a film that generally is perceived as not super great, but you are really into it?
This one, I always have like a ton of answers for this. Since I was going to say another spoof movie because I've watched, I'm a big spoof movie guy and I like some really bad ones. But I won't say that. We already have a spoof answer. So my answer is actually going to be The Village, the M. Night Shyamalan.
Oh, sure.
Shyamalan's third movie.
Yeah.
That movie, I think it had a really bad reputation when it came out because I think a lot of people just were like expecting twisty turny. Oh, it's going to be really, and it was not that as much. There's some twists in that movie, but it's much more, it's a character drama. It's characters dealing with trauma. And that's like the main motivation of what's happening in the movie. And that's like a bummer, especially if you're like, well, all of his movies kind of always are about trauma in some sense. And that movie, I think, like, its reputation has gotten better over the years, it seems like. But I do still think there's this, like, overarching thing that, like, oh, that's it's like Lady in the Water level M. Night Shyamalan movie. And it's like, it is, I think, maybe his second or third best movie, I would say.
Really? Yeah. That's bold. That M. Night Shyamalan is like, that's a filmmaker that I feel like.
You either love him. Yeah.
Because his early work, everyone's pretty much on board with for the first couple. And then there's a period where it's all over the map. For how people react to it.
Yeah.
And then lately a couple more have been responding to it.
People liked Knock at the Cabin. I think half of the people liked Old.
Right.
And I think half of the people hated Old. I think it was kind of the same for Knock at the Cabin. But I think he's kind of gone into this niche of people who understand what he makes like it. And
yeah.
If people don't get it or it doesn't appeal to them in that way, they're just never going to like it.
My wife also has some opinions about that mid-career Shyamalan that we go back and forth with.
I'm sure she likes like the craziest ones he's done. Like I'm sure she likes like The Last Airbender and Another Earth and all of his.
I don't think she's seen this. I think Lady in the Water I think is actually on her list.
I haven't seen that one. I think I would probably like it. Paul Giamatti being weird.
Is he in that?
Yeah.
Oh,
well, now
there
I'm
you
on
go.
Board. Yeah. I'm immediately on board.
He's a good guy.
All right, we have one more segment.
We do. Actually, can I ask one more question?
Yeah, of course.
What is Marty, what's your first memory of seeing a movie in a theater? Do you have one? Was there a theater in the town you grew up in?
No, there was a theater next to the town. And then I would have to. So I grew up in North Central Wisconsin, kind of smack dab in the middle of Eau Claire and Wausau, Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
Those are my two metropolises that I grew up near as a young child. So I would drive to Eau Claire and Chippewa Falls a lot to see movies. Weirdly, one of the first things I can remember, I think I saw Mission Impossible 2 in the theaters, and I think I would have been like 10 or 11 when that came out. So I feel like that was maybe the first PG-13 movie I saw in theaters, which can't be true. Like, I feel like I had to have been seeing, because I watched like movies I should not have been watching when I was like really young. Because my parents they were like movies my parents didn't know of. So they were like, oh, sure, you can watch A Clockwork Orange. And I'm like watching that as like a 12-year-old or whatever. Mom, can you rent this movie for me? Yeah, it's X-rated.
Yeah,
don't worry
fine.
About it. Yeah.
Oh, that's pretty good. That's surprising, though. That's a
Mission
one.
Impossible 2?
Yeah.
a problem I have. This is now just getting into me, not me as a filmmaker, but me as a person. I have like so few memories from before I was 18. Like, I just don't remember anything from my childhood very much.
This is the beginning of a movie right now. Why can't I remember anything from when I was in the
abducted by aliens?
You're a robot?
Or it could be that too. That would rule. Yeah. Honestly, let me be a robot. God, give me some cybernetic improvements.
All right, we have a segment we like to do on the show called What Else Have You Been Watching? Mm. So I'll, just to make you comfortable, I'm going to go first.
I'm so uncomfortable.
Yeah, I know.
So
you're very uncomfortable. I can tell. It's oozing.
I'm just going to sit here and judge you both.
That's perfect. I saw a movie recently called The Hurricanes. H-E-R-R-icanes. Hurricanes. And it is a great documentary about the Houston Hurricanes, which is a woman's full tackle football team from the 70s. Whoa. And it was like a history of how that team came together, the obvious negative responses that you're going to get from society at that mm-hmm. time, and how it influenced female sports going forward. So it was really interesting. And it just, it was more emotional than I thought it was going to be, because I'm not a huge sport person, but this was more fascinating than just your typical sports film. So you hear from the women who are in it and where they're at now. There's a point at which you see a reunion, which is just delightful. And I think that's where the feels really got in there. But then especially when you see young women who are playing football or other sports now and then interacting with those pioneers, essentially, from that first team. It was really, really interesting. That's the kind of sports movie I like. Not the typical Friday Night Lights. Is that a thing?
Yeah, that's a thing. And a TV show.
That TV show was so good, though. But I didn't watch it for so long because in my mind, I'm like, I grew up in a high school that all they cared about was football and nothing else. I'm like, I'm not watching the show, but it was actually really, really good. So I have to stop doing that to myself. That's, all right, Marty.
That show has a great, like, soapy quality to it that it really nails.
Yeah, that's
the
what
tone
I
really,
felt
really well.
I've heard. Yeah.
Am I only allowed to say one movie? Is there rules?
No, you can.
I can
say
as
more
far
than
back
one
as I want.
And you, well, recently,
okay.
What else you've been watching is more current. It can
sure.
be a show. It can be
sure.
a book.
Watching mm-hmm. it kind of implies that I'm in the middle of that, though. So that's kind of odd, though.
What else have you watched
Thank you.
Recently, if that helps you?
Not focus. To punch up the
Are
segment
Are we sitting
title.
Here with a writer?
Yeah, yeah.
I think.
Well, let's focus you in. What else have you watched in the last 10 to 13 days?
Okay, great. Tons of stuff. So I'll say the first one would be, I'll list a couple things.
Okay.
One that's current and still in theaters and is playing at the Oriental Theater, maybe not anymore, is Zone of Interest, which I really loved.
It is playing.
Yeah.
Oh, but at the time this comes out.
Yeah,
yeah, probably.
Probably still playing. which is really great. For those of you who don't know, it's about the commandant of Auschwitz's family as they like live next door to Auschwitz during the Holocaust. It's very bleak. It's very, you need to see it. I would recommend seeing it in a theater because it's a very sound forward movie. Jonathan Glazer, director of that movie, tends to use sound a lot more to express story than other filmmakers will do at that level, I would say. Zone of Interest is really great. And then I'll give two more.
I also have this problem. I just want to list everything.
Yeah.
I
can't
help it. Well, it's good. It's more stuff.
That one's a recent one. So that one's in the theaters.
Sure.
This is one you can watch at home.
Yeah.
In the Cut, which is a Jane Campion movie about Meg Ryan plays like a teacher who starts getting kind of entangled with this like serial killer thing that's happening, and she starts to like an affair with the detective who's investigating the serial killer, played by Mark Ruffalo. And it's a classic Jane Campion movie. It is incredibly horny and incredibly it's not super bleak, but it's very, you know, it's not happy-go-lucky good time. I mean, it's a movie about a cop looking after a serial killer and a woman who kind of gets entangled in all of this.
Tons of fun.
Give me a pen. I got to write that one.
Yeah.
It's really good. It is really good. But you also have to like kind of Campion's approach to some of her choices are always interesting. And last one I'll say, I saw Sullivan's Travels for the first time, which I'd never seen before.
Oh, that's a great movie.
Which is Preston Sturges' movie about a director in Hollywood who decides he wants to kind of cosplay as a tramp so that he can feel what it feels like to be a real American or to be poor, so that he can make like serious dramas from this experience. And it's just a series of him getting into trouble as like a unhoused person who doesn't have money, and then immediately being flown out of it by like his various assistants and studio heads who will just save him anytime he gets in any trouble. It's a really solid movie.
The inspiration for Undercover Boss, the TV show, I assume.
Is it really?
No. No. But as you're describing it, I'm like, you're just talking about Undercover Boss.
It is kind of, but it actually has like satirical tones on like Undercover Boss, which maybe doesn't understand why it's a little gross what it's doing. It's also inspired O Brother, Where Art Thou, because the movie he wants to make is called O Brother, Where Art Thou.
Oh, how funny.
And then eventually, Coen Brothers use that for the title of their movie.
That's a great movie, and The Lady Eve is another one by that director, which is another phenomenal one. These are all good movies, a lot of good stuff to dig into now.
It's nice when we have someone besides just the two of us in here educating us.
And I'm not just talking about Blade over and over again.
I mean, okay, I was going to say, don't say I'm educating, but yes, Christopher is just talking about how much he likes Blade.
Well, we appreciate you being on here.
Of course.
The movie is Early Bird, and it's going to be streaming on March 26th.
Yeah.
So everyone check it out. We appreciate you coming in.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
We want to thank some people.
Indeed. Thank you to Kim Shine, the producer of Cinebuds Podcast.
Absolutely. And thank you to Newski, who does our wonderful theme song every week.
Much love to Associated Bank, the sponsor of this podcast.
Yeah, we could not do this without our wonderful members, both from Radio Milwaukee and from Milwaukee Film. Thank you guys so much.
Go see a movie in the theater if
Please.
You can. Say bye, Marty.
Goodbye, Marty.
I knew it. Bye-bye.